Thanks, Tim. How lovely to see you this morning. Happy Father's Day. I am a happy father, so it's a happy Father's Day for me. As I was walking here, I looked down and saw a robin hopping just in front of me. And I thought, what is that in your mouth, little robin? And there was a worm in its mouth, a worm that he had twisted up. So it was, I don't know, he wanted to go somewhere nice to eat or what was going on. Maybe he was bringing it home for his children or her children. But I was reminded that for the robin to live, the worm has to die. And that for this moment to be here, the previous moment has to die. And that for the next moment to be here, this moment has to die. As Buddha said quite some time ago, everything that comes into being will pass away. Make your peace with that, and all will be well. So, we had a Shuso ceremony here a couple months ago, which is consists mostly of a person who has made Shuso sitting there and being asked a lot of questions by pretty much everyone who's there. They just pepper this innocent person with questions. And many people here were at the Shuso ceremony. I was the Shuso. And in that circumstance, there were many questions, but one came up that I remember clearly, which was someone that, to paraphrase, someone asked, what is the most important thing? And my response was love. Which, at the time, seemed like it required no explanation. But fortunately, if you have a head like mine, many explanations subsequently emerged. So I'm going to take what was a very, very nice one-word answer from the Shuso ceremony and turn it into a 35-minute-long answer. Basically, why would I respond personally that the most important thing is love? I also like to think that this answer was proof that I'm not too deep. Pretty simple answer. Pretty simple answer. So love has, there's a lot of definitions of love. And I'm talking, when I gave that response, really I was talking about a very particular kind of love or a very particular definition of love. And I didn't want to get into some explanation at the time because I think everyone knew the kind of love I was talking about because we had been engaged in this process of intimate questioning and inquiry together during the ceremony. But the love that I'm talking about is, it's like Zazen mind. Or you could say it's non-judgment. It's completely open. Perhaps you could say it's complete mutuality. Or non-separation. It's not really a feeling or an emotion. It's like the condition of connection. So maybe that sounds... maybe you think, oh, I know what that's like. Or maybe you think, what the heck is this guy talking about? I don't know. It's connection rather than control. So a lot of times when we talk about love, we say, like, I love this sandwich. Now, that's probably not what I'm talking about here. So, you know, when we talk about love, often what we mean is attachment. It's that simple. We mean attachment. I like this thing and I want more of it. It is giving me personal pleasure at this moment. So that's not really what I'm talking about. So connection rather than control, acceptance rather than desire, This is the kind of love I'm talking about. I think of a story in a book by Pema Chodron, who's a really wonderful Western teacher. She lives in Nova Scotia, I believe. Very popular woman. Inspiring. She has this story that she's teaching about something, and someone sent her a letter. And it said, "Wow, I was listening to your teaching on this subject of compassion, and it really reminded me of this thing that happened to me." So the guy tells this story that he was, he's a school counselor, and he was counseling a young woman who was in an extremely unsafe and unhealthy home environment. And so he arranged for her to be moved to a more safe and more healthy home environment. And apparently the young woman's father was displeased. Now, he had heard about this young woman's father, who apparently was extremely intimidating, prone to violence, and perhaps, I'm not remembering this well, but a life of crime. So the counselor is in his office, and this guy comes in, who he hasn't met, but he is massive, covered in prison tattoos, and really, really pissed. And the counselor experiences fear. Surprise! And the guy starts saying things which indicate that it is his daughter that has been removed from his custody by this school counselor, or through the intervention of the school counselor. And he's just like, you know, furiously saying, "What the hell do you think you're doing? You are taking my daughter away from me. Who do you think you are?" And it's really intense. The school counselor said, although he experienced this enormous fear when the guy first walked in, just the shock of this, you know, really angry, large person, but then it just sort of dissipated completely. And he was just, you know, there, experiencing the sounds of this person and hearing what he said and really feeling connected to him. And at a moment of pause, when this guy was shouting at him, he said, "You must really love your daughter." And the guy just sat down and started weeping. So, you know, in this moment, this fellow, this counselor, he wasn't caught by what Tim has been talking about as the fear body. He wasn't caught by the shame body, where he said, "Oh, maybe I didn't do the right thing. Maybe I should apologize," or, "Maybe I didn't do the right thing. Maybe I should get really defensive." He just saw and felt connected to the suffering of this human being. He didn't try and make something happen with him or control the situation. He just made an observation that might seem strange. He didn't say, "If you love your daughter, why are you so awful to her?" He just said, "You must really love your daughter." And it was true. Now, the love that this guy had might have been completely masked by all kinds of habitual, emotional, and behavioral tendencies that were disastrous for him and everyone around him. But in that moment, just seeing that there was love there penetrated his heart. So connection rather than control, not trying to get something for yourself, not being caught by your own preconceptions, because you probably had some preconceptions about this guy. This is the kind of love I'm talking about. Just to be clear, I'm not talking precisely about the love that the father was experiencing for his daughter, which was completely enmeshed with all kinds of harmful tendencies, which I will talk about in a minute. So I could be excommunicated for this talk, by the way, because in general, love is not a particularly strong theme in Buddhism. I will quote to you from the earliest teachings. This is a paraphrase, but it's a pretty accurate paraphrase from the Buddha. He who loves 50 people has 50 woes. He who loves no one has no woes. Dude! That's tough. That's tough, but you know what? It's kind of true, isn't it? We know that. You know, if you really love someone, you're going to have to see them suffer. You're going to have to see them pass away. So there's a truth there. But what he's talking about is love as attachment, wanting them to have some particular kind of circumstance in their life, like success or survival. And of course, we have that. That's the way it is. But at the same time, the possibility is there for this, and the truth is there for all of us of the existence of this other kind of love, which is just connection. Just connection. So I'm reading a book called Tom Jones by Henry Fielding. I guess you'd call it a classic of English literature. It's hilarious. I like books that are hilarious. And it's insightful. And in it, Fielding has a beautiful passage where he talks about the joy that people feel at just giving and being connected to people. And it's like, oh yeah, I know about that. I experienced that. But he says, well, we call that love. But don't we also call love, as I said, I love this sandwich, or because of the theme of Tom Jones, is this incredibly beautiful and loving person who's incredibly generous but has a terrible fault, which is that he likes to sleep around, which in the 18th century caused a lot of problems for a lot of people. So he says, we call love also just sensual lust, you know? Like, I love to be with you, baby. You know, that's kind of Tom Jones. He comes up with that kind of thing. Flowery language, but you get the idea. So we call this both these things love. And one really isn't the same as the other. I mean, you certainly have many instances where people engage in love, which is purely attachment. And it's really harmful. But he says, but oftentimes, actually, they go totally together. They're completely together. You know, many people have been bonded by a profound sense of connection and mutuality for life in a beautiful way. And part of that bonding was, you know, engagement in just pure attachment. That's just the way it is. We're people. And you can look at this in terms of, you know, the romantic elements of a you know, loving relationship. And you can also see it just with your children, you know. Like, oh, with your parents. I mean, you might give so much to a child, but at the same time, sometimes you're like, why don't you just do it my way? Because my way is really good. You know, that happens to me from both my father and to my son. That happens. So these things are kind of bound up in human consciousness. I was thinking about, okay, so what if you were to just pay? What if we were to monetize what it actually takes to cause a human being to survive from the birth until the age of 5? It's a 24-hour-a-day job. everyone would die if it wasn't done. There would be no people here. It would completely collapse the economies of money that we live with. And yet, everyone here, even if your parents had terrible failings, experienced it, or you could never possibly be alive. And many people here have, you noticed you were doing it. Oh, I'm being a parent. Yes, this is hard. Or, oh, I am being rather generous at this moment. I mean, that happens, sure. But at the same time, countless hours of just thoughtless giving. Pure giving, support, and mutuality that allows for the propagation of generations of human beings, for us to be here. We depend on this. We are, all of us, completely dependent on an absolutely incomprehensible scale of loving action just to be here right now. And like I said, it's not like, people like to, some people like to really rhapsodize and, idealize parenthood, which would be pretty fun on Father's Day for me, being a father. But, it's all bound up in our own stuff. I'm incredibly grateful and have huge love for my father and the enormous amount he gave to me so that I can be here. But he did lots of really harmful things. He had extremely harmful behavioral and emotional habits that damaged me. That's just true. It's okay. I love him. I lost him. He died 12 years ago. And I have habits that harm my son. I do my best to see them, and I do my best to let go of them. But I'm just human. And those habits basically are attachment. What sometimes we call love. So, this love I'm talking about, this connection, this love that is just connection, is actually, arguably, the basic ground of existence. So this is why it's important for me to say, I'm not talking about a feeling, because I'm not saying, like, the universe is the feeling of love. What I'm saying is, the universe is just mutuality. It's just constant mutuality. This really is the central message of Mahayana Buddhism. That our lives and our suffering are inextricably interwoven with a vast, incomprehensible network of coexisting. So sometimes we call this emptiness, or I might call it the universe, or we might call it interdependence, coexistence, dependent co-arising, prajnaparamita. Prajnaparamita is just means perfection of wisdom. So one of the main central concepts of Mahayana Buddhism. And the perfection of wisdom is actually seeing that there's no wisdom, that there's no separation between you and anything else. Just seeing connection. So I like to, every once in a while, just pull out the big dogs here. I have some sections of the Prajnaparamita Sutra in 10,000 lines. If you've never been exposed to a Prajnaparamita Sutra, I will just warn you, they're not afraid of hyperbole. One who exists solely as this boundaryless mind and heart of wisdom and love will not perceive difficulties simply because this one never perceives any separation, substantiality, or limit. The ease, freedom, and delight of Prajnaparamita flows through the awareness of the Bodhisattva a constant reminder that no personal self exists substantially or independently, just as no apparent structure of the universe exists substantially or independently. This principle of ontological transparency applies to every subjective or objective structure or process that can possibly be experienced by any consciousness. Thus, the consecrated heart of love is identical with the clear mind of transcendent insight. So we think there are separate things. That's cool. But maybe there aren't. And insofar as there are no separate things, there's just interdependence. There's just non-attached mutuality, what I am defining in this talk as love. That is to say, the ground of being is love. This is why I call this talk Depending on Love. Because the promise of Mahayana Buddhism is that we can depend on love. And in fact, that we already are. It's the nature of being. Just in the act of breathing, we are just mutuality with our atmosphere. In this individual moment, without oxygen metabolizing into our bodies, we would cease to exist. Every single moment. In the New York Times this week, there was an article about the 100 trillion bacteria that live on average in a human being all the time. 100 trillion. Guess what? We are completely dependent on them. Without them, we would die. They metabolize our food for us. They clean our skin. They do all kinds of stuff. They don't even know. As one of the scientists who is being quoted, who has been making a whole bunch of extraordinary insights about these bacteria, he said, the research is very humbling. And he uttered this quote, which I thought was rather striking. Humans, said Dr. David Relman, a Stanford microbiologist, are like coral, an assemblage of life forms living together. That's just your body. We're not even talking about the body of mutuality of the people in this room, or the body of mutuality of the people in this larger community. So Tim has, in a couple of talks, given this quote I really like from Shakespeare, which is, thought's the slave of life, and life times fool. So, you know, our thoughts that just keep coming, and we keep believing, and keep running our lives, are the slaves of the conditions of life. Thoughts, the slaves of life. And life is times full. Life is times full because time is change. Everything is changing. So life is completely dependent on this inexorable change. We don't want life to be times full. I would love to have my father back. I love my father. I miss my father. Life is times full. So thought's the slave of life and life's time's fool. But Shakespeare also said, love's not time's fool. Though rosy lips and cheeks within his bending sickle's compass come. Love's not time's fool. Though rosy lips and cheeks within his bending sickle's compass come. Rosy lips and cheeks. That's attachment. What we love. Oh, she's beautiful. She's young and beautiful. Within his bending sickles, compass come. This bending sickle, the scythe of time, of death, sweeping down everything. Though rosy lips and cheeks within his bending sickles, compass come, loves not time's fool. Life is time's fool. Love is not. We will die. Love will not. The things we want and we are attached to will all pass away, but love will not. Thoughts will be the slaves to the conditions of life and time and change, but love will not. So, when one talks about complete non-separation, and, you know, I read this Prajnaparamita Sutra, and it's like, wow, you see that there's no substantially existing thing, and there's nothing separate from you. You know, people say, well, wait a minute. If there's nothing separate from me, and I believe that, what happens when a bus is going by? Might I not just walk in front of it, because I'm not separate from the bus? A classic Buddhist argumentation. Or, if I'm not separate from anything, why would I do anything? Why am I going to make any effort to go help people who are impoverished? I'm not separate from them. It's just complete mutuality. I'm just going to sit here on my cushion and be love by myself. So we say, they say, then the teacher will often say, well, we depend on our thoughts. We need this. We need this, which is true. We need to say, I'm you, you're me, I set boundaries. If you're harmful to me, I'll say, I can't be with you. Or we realize that someone else is suffering and we give our things to them. Or we give our ears completely. We take time to be with people. We need to know that we're separate in order to make those efforts. But I often hear people say we depend on our thinking. And this is why I wanted to write a talk which is called Depending on Love. Because the problem is we are ignoring all the time that we're completely dependent on love all the time. It's always holding us up. So this isn't about complacency at all. It's like, how complacent are all those leaves out the window? They're doing what they're doing. They're active. All these 100 trillion beings living inside us are constantly doing what they do to support us. So when we realize and we taste this kind of love and connection, the natural inclination is just to move, to support, and be kind, be available. Practical terms. Say, your partner comes home, and they're really not very happy. They're in a condition of mind where everything you do is kind of annoying, and they're complaining about a lot of things. And it might be possible for you to be like, I'm going to go outside. I'm leaving. Or it might be possible for you to go, why are you complaining about everything? The problem is really just your mind. You should let go of your attachments. Not recommended. Or you could just start arguing, no, I didn't put it there. It's not my fault that this problem that you're seeing is you get all defensive. There's a million things we can do that are all based on fear, shame, avoiding, defensiveness, anger. It's also possible to just be present. You know, sometimes I am able, on occasion, when my partner is really agitated, to just be present and just hear her. just hear her. Or my son. It's Father's Day. Let's talk about my son. He's a human being. He's an adolescent. He struggles. And sometimes, instead of explaining to him how he should do things, I can just be there for him. Without any idea. Without any plan. I'm really struck by the similarity between the quote by Shakespeare that I gave you. Love's not time's fool, though rosy lips and cheeks within his bending sickle's compass come. And these two quotes, which are not actually supposed to be paired, but make sense as a pairing, I think, from Dogen Zenji. First line of the Fukan Zazengi is, "This airplane is originally perfect and all-pervading." No, that's not true. The line is, "The way is originally perfect and all-pervading." Love's not time's fool. The way, the Buddha way, realization, is infinite. It extends through all space and all time. The way is originally perfect and all-pervading. Love's not time's fool. But in a similar passage from the Genjo Koan, Dogen says, "Yet in attachment blossoms fall, and in aversion weeds spread. The way is originally perfect and all-pervading, yet in attachment blossoms fall, and in aversion weeds spread. Love's not time's fool, though rosy lips and cheeks within his bending sickle's compass come." So there is a complete intimacy between our attachment and our suffering and our complete non-attachment, the illusion of our attachment, our complete dependence on the ground of being. Whatever you want to call it, love, the universe, interdependence, prajnaparamita. So, you know, in Voltaire's Candide is, he just runs around saying, he's been taught by his philosopher teacher, "We live in the best possible worlds, where everything is perfect as it could be." And then Candide goes through the world and he ends up in a war where he sees people slaughtered and an epidemic where people are dying and there's just people doing awful, disastrous things and there's all this suffering. So it's a satire. Here's this person trying to claim everything's perfect in the conditions of awfulness. Claiming everything is perfect in the conditions of awfulness is love's not time's fool, though rosy lips and cheeks within his bending sickle's compass come. It is. The way is originally perfect and all-pervading, yet in attachment, blossoms fall, and in aversion weeds spread. The problem is Candide tries to pretend or use his story that everything is perfect to ignore what is there instead of realizing that both are true. In every moment, both are true. By the way, at the end, Candide kind of changes, and his what he says one should do is cultivate your little garden. Hey, Voltaire's not bad. So this talk isn't about trying to pretend that things are perfect when they're not. It's just trying to see that as well as all the difficulty and all the suffering in the world, at the exact same time, everything is perfect. The way is perfect and all-pervading. So it doesn't mean we won't die. You know, it doesn't mean people won't do harmful things to each other. So, you know, I got to come back to this idea that I think someone might think, now, wait a minute, this is pretty Pollyannish. This is pretty Candide-ish. But really, My favorite example of the manifestation of this kind of love and the thinking about it and using it and embracing it is the civil rights movement's most concentrated period of energy in the United States in the early 60s. Now, is there anyone here or almost any in the world who would think the conditions of people would be better 50 years on if instead of coming back constantly within that movement to the principle of connection, nonviolence, and love for all people involved, including the oppressors, which is a term that was not used because it was not loving. Do you think if instead it would have been like, let's go get them, we'll arm ourselves and take over? Is there anyone in the world who think the condition of either black people or white people in the United States would have been improved? Love is effective. It is effective. So, let's take a minute to do a little meditation practice to cultivate some non-attached love. I like meditation. And I'm just going to use some simple old techniques from early Buddhist practice. So you can just find some comfortable posture to be still. And what I will do here is I will lead us through a very brief metta meditation practice, which I will join with a practice of the remembrance of impermanence. So we cultivate some love and some letting go. Love that is not about attachment. Then you can just take a moment to breathe wholeheartedly. Just make a connection to the body, sensations in the body. You can close your eyes. Take in your connection to all the people in this room. The birds. We'll just cultivate some loving thoughts. May we, with all beings in the universe, be happy. You can just repeat this phrase in your mind. May we, with all beings in the universe, be happy. May we, with all beings in the universe, be safe and protected. You can repeat this phrase in your mind. May we, with all beings in the universe, be safe and protected. May we, with all beings in the universe, be healthy and strong. Just repeat this phrase. May we, with all beings, be healthy and strong. May we, with all beings in the universe, be at ease. So now I will go through the traditional five remembrances and just be with whatever feeling arises. We and all beings are subject to aging. We cannot avoid aging. We and all beings are subject to illness. We cannot avoid illness. We and all beings are subject to death. Everything is subject to passing away. We and all beings will be parted from all that is dear and beloved to us. Actions are our only possessions. Our actions are the womb from which we have sprung. Our actions are our protection. as we do, so shall we become. May we with all beings be at ease. Just repeat this phrase a few times. May all beings, may we and all beings be at ease. You may return your attention to the sounds, breathing, the body, let the eyes open. So we are already completely depending on love in every moment. To realize it takes practice. I recommend meditation practice. I can recommend meeting with a teacher, spending time with one of the teachers here and showing yourself. Right now is always the opportunity for realization. But it's okay if you don't take this opportunity for realization, because love is always realizing you. Thank you for listening. I think we have a minute or two if anyone would like to make an observation or a question.
Yeah, what was that, Jay?
The quote that Tim has given before is from Henry IV, and the quote that I gave is from Sonnet 116, "Let me not to the marriage of true minds admit impediments." That is that's a good one. Well, I think what I mean is we think we're here. I usually think I'm here. You know, it's like, looks like I'm here to me most of the time. The fact that that is true, the ground of that happening, that's what the ground of being is. So I'm saying the ground of being is love, which I'm just defining as mutuality without any ideas. So the fact that I'm here is created by conditions which don't have ideas. They might. Maybe it'll turn out there's like some God who has like figured everything out. It's all like a plan. That's cool. But I don't know that. So I'm saying it's just love. Something a little more simple. So the ground of being, that which allows there to be being. And being is really just an idea. It's just a tendency, I believe, of human consciousness to think something is here. But that is the ground of that occurring is incomprehensible. It's not knowing. Doesn't know anything. Doesn't have any separations. How am I doing?
I like the incomprehensible.
Yeah.
There's a French philosopher, and I think it's Jacques Ellul, and I don't find myself saying that around very often. But anyway, he was talking about love as the gluon, I think, between atoms. You know, like physically, they can't explain what, you know, that stuff is between atoms that makes it all work, and he called it love. So I think that is the ground of being.
That's a happy thought. I'm just here trying to have some happy thoughts.
I just had a question. What made you choose the word love? As I was kind of reflecting on it, visually it's really hard for me to visualize it in a sense because it's, as you mentioned, it has so many meanings. And all those different meanings just kind of shift. You know, I guess I was just kind of thinking, is there other words that reflect it? Because it's really hard for me to grasp it.
Yeah, well, I think what I'm talking about is often called emptiness in this tradition, which sounds kind of weird. Like, wait a minute, emptiness and love? Read the sutras. That's what they're talking about. I mean, that's all this book is. Emptiness is love. Non-conception is love. Prajnaparamita. So there's a lot of Buddhist technical terms, basically. So why did I choose it? I chose this talk because someone asked me a simple question and I gave an intuitive answer. Love. And then I was like, well, I don't mean attachment. So I wanted to elucidate. But it's just the feeling of my heart. You know, language is subtle and personal. It's shared, but each person takes a word differently. So what I'm talking about here is really not original at all. I'm just basically talking about the basic principle of Mahayana Buddhism, which is that there's a vast, incomprehensible togetherness that we don't see most of the time.
It's a dialogue that's left behind. It's Matrix. It's the last series, and Neo's trapped in the train station. And he's talking to a program, and the program is talking about how much he loves his daughter. And Neo says, well, I don't understand. The guy says, love is a word. What matters is the connection behind it. It's been such a. It was. There's a lot of things that happen, but that just kind of left my mind in your consciousness that basically everything you say, of course, is a thing you're pointing at the moon, but what matters is what connections are felt behind what is said. Love is, I think, a good choice for something to hang your head on for the day because of all of the connections that figure out the elements. The richness that comes with that is a lot of things.
Love and connection. I don't know if you could hear that, but he was talking about love and the connection behind the word. And that's what I care about. Love, throw the word out. I hope we all feel connected here today. I think we have to wrap up. I think it's true. I probably should have given this, I should have thought. If you say love, people are going to want to talk about it, so I should have left more time. But hey, we can all talk about love for the rest of our lives. Let's do that. See what happens.